The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, this is Louise Sorrell. I'm talking to TV Confidential. And you should tune in because they're really wonderful.
Ed Robertson, welcoming you to this week's edition of TV Confidential, radio talk show about television that wishes you and yours all the best in the new year and beyond. Our second hour this week will include a return appearance by our friend Lee Purcell. Lee Purcell, the actress all of you know for her roles in Big Wednesday, Valley Girl, Mr. Majestic, Stir Crazy, Carol of the Bells, and other film and TV productions. Lee Purcell, also one of the driving forces behind the Hollywood Radio Players, a troupe of actors who perform reenactments of classic radio shows to help raise funds for the Motion Picture and Television Fund. There's a brand new production of Hollywood Radio Players available this week as this program airs. We'll tell you more about it when Lee Purcell joins us in our second hour. I hope you stay tuned for that. Our second hour will also include a conversation with Lee E. Cox. Lee Cox, the actor most of you know for his recurring role as rookie police officer Aaron Castor in the Emmy Award-winning HBO series The Wire. Lee Cox can also be seen this month in Snap. Snap, a new anthology series that will remind you both of The Twilight Zone and the British sci-fi anthology series Black Mirror. We'll tell you more about Snap when Lee Cox joins us also in our second hour. We hope you stay tuned for that. As well, our first hour will include a tribute to Barbara Walters. Barbara Walters, the pioneering newswoman who, long before hosting The View, broke ground for women in television, first as co-host of The Today Show, then as the co-anchor of the ABC Evening News and co-host of 2020. Barbara Walters passed away this past Friday, December 30th, at the age of 93. We have three segments in the works, each of which touch on various aspects of Barbara Walters' life and career. We will play those for you when we pay tribute to Barbara Walters later on in this hour. In the meantime, Greg Airbar is with us to help us open up the program. Greg Airbar,
author of the forthcoming Hanna-Barbera, The Recorded History, which is due out in 2024, if all goes well, although I imagine it will be available for pre-order much sooner than that. Greg ordinarily looks at DVD, Blu-ray streaming titles, but today we're going to shift gears a little bit.
It is the second week of the new year as this program airs, and if you're like most of us, you probably received a few gift cards over the holidays.
Amazon gift cards. Greg has some neat ideas for how to spend those Amazon gift cards.
They burn a hole in my pocket, I want to tell you. Not a couple of days go by, and it's like, oh, I know what I'm going to use these for. Usually when I open them, like, oh, I know what I'm going to use these for. Well, we want to give you some suggestions for when you open them and you go, oh, and that'll make your friends happy too. Or as, what was it, SNL used to call it Looks at Books, and David Letterman had his bookmobile.
Okay.
Well, this is our own special version of this. Can we start, though? Can I make you blush, Ed? And can we start with the new editions of your books?
If you must, this is not this.
Yes,
this is
I
not
must.
The this is not the reason why we're doing this segment. But sure.
Well, yeah, but Ed, we don't talk about, you know, you're so busy interviewing the stars and the best and the brightest that we that the camera doesn't the camera doesn't often get turned.
The camera never gets turned on me because there is no camera.
Because there is no camera, but
there is no camera in radio. No.
let's turn the ribbon mic.
We'll turn the microphone on.
Yeah, and talk about because you've written two extraordinarily books that have so stood the test of time that they are bigger and better and more wonderful than ever.
Well, if you insist, calendar year 2022, which we're wrapping up as we record this conversation, is the the 65th anniversary of the premiere of Maverick on the air, and our friends at Black Pond Press reissued Maverick Legend of the West Revised Third Edition. Everything you want to know about the history of Maverick on television, how it came to be, the internal fights that Roy Huggins went through with Warner Brothers over the creative rights of the show. This is back in the days of the early days of television, where studios such as Warner Brothers, if they were going to do television, they were going to do television shows of properties they already owned, either as movies or as books. And again, this is the early first 10, 12 years of television as we know it. Warner Brothers refused to pay any writer, independent writer, a created by credit, because that would be royalties in perpetuity for when shows went into reruns and any future anticipated adaptations of it. And so the lengths that Warner Brothers took to keep Roy Huggins from earning his full creative property, you know, entitlement as the creator of the Maverick property, which was arguably the most successful of the Warner Brothers shows that came about in the 1950s, early 1960s, because Maverick, in many respects, laid the groundwork for formulas such as 77, Sunset Strict, and all the other shows that Warner Brothers were in development, one way or the other, went back to Roy Huggins. So the backstory of that is in Maverick, Legend of the West, Third Edition. And there's new information that I discovered when I updated this a couple of years ago, one of which is Robert Colbert, who we know mostly from the Time Tunnel show. He was a contract player with Warner Brothers, and when the lawsuit that James Garner filed in 1960 went his way and freed him from Warner Brothers and freed him from any obligation to doing Maverick, Warner Brothers plucked Robert Colbert from whatever show he was doing at the studio and cast him as the heretofore never mentioned third Maverick brother, Brent, who was dressed like Brett and kind of looked like Brett, but basically did whatever Maverick trip was in development at the time. Colbert only did two shows late in the fourth season of Maverick, and then Maverick was picked up for a fifth year, but Robert Colbert went on to do other stuff for the studio. Never did another Maverick. The heretofore unknown third brother Brent Maverick therefore came and went after only two episodes. What I didn't know is that when Maverick was renewed for the fifth season, the original plan was to incorporate Colbert into that fifth season. They had at least three shows in development, all of which were episodes featuring Robert Colbert as Brent, as they're getting ready for the spring of 1961. And one way or another, they decided not to do a full 26. They only decided to do 13 with Jack Kelly. I did not know that. That's new information. That is one of the new bits of information that's included in Maverick Legend of the West Revised Third Edition, available through Black Pond Press.
And it's a great time to watch the show while reading it, too, because it's on MeTV.
Yeah, and it's on MeTV. It's also available on some of the other streaming services. I also re-updated 45 years of the Rockford Files Revised Third Edition. Also available, Black Pond Press, as well as Amazon. Both the third edition of Maverick and the third edition of Rockford features a lot more interviews with people that I didn't have access to at the time I originally did the book, but I was able to incorporate them, and it just adds to a richer, fuller history. There's also a new interview with James Garner that I was not aware of. My friend James Zurich, who was an accomplished author, he wrote an excellent biography on actress Peg Entwistle and the history of the Hollywood sign. He was a fabulous researcher. James passed away about a year ago. One of his last great accomplishments, he found this. This is what happens. You know this, Greg. This is what happens when you're researching one thing. You stumble onto something else.
Oh, yes.
And he was doing some work for Jim's daughter, Gigi. He was looking at one thing, and he discovered this recorded interview that Jim did around 65, 66, in which he talks at length about his years on Maverick and what he went through with the lawsuit in 1960, 61. Excerpts from that conversation are now included in both the revised third editions of both the Rockford Files and Maverick Legend of the West, both of which are available through Black Pond Press.
Well, the neat thing about these two shows is that they're not only really great shows, but they are evergreen, and they're very accessible. They're not hard to find. They're not obscure.
And they're fun. If you like old television, if you like old movies from the Golden Age, if you like old radio from the Golden Age, a lot of radio stars, a lot of film stars made the transition from radio and film to television. And so you will come up with a lot of great character actors like Gage Clark or Robert Caricart who appear in all of these shows, and they're a lot of fun.
Oh, Gage Clark was, you know, he had a line, I love the quote, in Pollyanna. He played Mr. Murg, the mortician, when Agnes Moorehead, it was Mrs. Snow, and she's buying the lining for her coffin, and he's caressing the coffin handles and you know, picking out the ultimate coffin for her because she's the hypochondriac of the town. And Pollyanna keeps, like, ruining the sale because she doesn't want Mrs. Snow to die. And he's, like, so irritated, and he says, "Why don't you go outside and play?" Just a great character actor can take a line and just make it soar, you know? Just so good. And James Garner's performances just, they transcend time because he plays a guy. He plays the guy who could be in any era.
Well, what's fun about both the Brett Maverick and Jim Rockford characters, my girlfriend and I are almost finished with Better Call Saul. We're in the fifth or sixth season as we record this conversation. In many ways, that anti-hero, that con man who's not a totally bad guy, he's not exactly a con man with a heart of gold, but he's a con man with what we would call situational ethics, where as long as the situation comes out to be a positive and nobody gets hurt, and the bad guys get got, and, you know, justice wins out at the end, and the con man, Maverick, gets what he wants, everything's good. That's situational ethics. Well, that is basically the Saul Goodman / Jimmy McGill character. It's taken to another level because Maverick stayed clear from bad guys. Maverick stayed clear from cartels and people that could get him killed, because Maverick's real goal in life was to make a lot of money and live to be 97 years old, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's basically Jimmy's goal, but, you know, sometimes Jimmy's background gets the best of him, and he ends up running a con. You know, he can't help not running a con. Another difference is Maverick liked his freedom, and Jim Rockford, to the same way, liked his freedom. He did not want to be tied down to marriage, and he did not want to be tied down to any one person, because that could compromise his freedom and his ability to up and leave at the drop of a hat. Whereas one of the fun things about Better Call Saul is watching the relationship between Jimmy and Kim Wexler, played by Rhea Seaborn, who starts off as sort of this straight-laced corporate lawyer who represents everything that Jimmy McGill is not, and yet somehow there is an indelible bond between the two of them. And as Bob Odenkirk,
the star of Better Call Saul,
has said in at least one other interview, the name of the show is Better Call Saul, but the real show should be called Who the Hell is Kim? Because it's what we learn about Kim. I mean, in the early on, we don't know a lot about Tim. Kim is very tight-lipped about her background. She doesn't reveal any more than she has to. And in the course of the show, we begin to see why. And in the last two seasons especially, we really see Kim's character come to light. And there's a lot more to her than we realize. And she understands Jimmy better than anybody else, and she will go out on a limb to protect Jimmy more than anybody else.
Yeah, she's brilliant. It's a great character, great chemistry. It's like a one of those great screen couples, really. When you see the two of them putting their heads together, it's like, it's magic.
And in many respects, the genesis of the Jimmy McGill character can be seen in characters like Brett Maverick and Jim Rockford. And so you, if you pick up a copy of Maverick Legend of the West, 3rd edition, or 45 Years of the Rockford Files, revised 3rd edition, you'll understand why. Both those books available at Black Pond Press.
Greg Arabar is with us with a few ideas on how to spend the Amazon gift cards, other holiday gift cards that you may have received over the holidays.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Got your happy price, Priceline.
So we'll move along to books that aren't written by. Move on to the other shelf.
Yes, this is the end of the self-promotion part of our program.
Well, you know what? While we're promoting ourselves, let me promote the book that people don't know about that isn't Mousetracks, that hardly ever gets mentioned, and that's Inside the Whimsy Works.
The Jimmy Johnson story. It's a good book.
Yeah, that's one of the first memoirs that was ever written about working at Disney, because people weren't writing about Disney and animation and stuff in the 70s. And he had an extraordinary career for 37 years, and he wrote his memoir in 1975, and then he passed away a few months later, and it sat in the archives untouched. So after the Mousetracks came out, we used that as a guide and as kind of the skeleton of the story. And then Didier Ghez, who is the president of the Hyperion Historical Alliance, said, why don't we take that and edit it into a book? And with the help of his children, it turned into quite a story, because this guy started out when they were making Snow White. And he went from the traffic delivery department, riding around the studio on a bicycle, to working in the insurance department. And he worked on the newsletter. He was a budding writer. He wanted to work for the story department. He worked in the merchandise. And this guy developed things. He innovated. He brought direct marketing to Disney, those slipcase books that you got in the 50s and 60s. But more than anything else, he established the Walt Disney Music Company, because there was no music company before the mid-40s. Disney didn't own the early songs. They had to buy most of them back, and some they never bought back, and including the scores to Snow White, Dumbo, and Pinocchio. They do not own those songs. They don't own When You Wish Upon a Star. A lot of that stuff is in the book, and it's about all the business behind-the-scenes stuff, all the people he dealt with, all the people he knew when he was dining in the rotunda, in the cafeteria, in the executive place, dining with Peter Ustinov, Tommy Steele, Suzanne Plachette. He said of the beautiful face and the salty tongue. what it was like to be hanging out with these people, what it was like to work, and then how he and Tutti Camerata developed this sound for the record company, and Annette Funicello's magnificent career that launched pretty much what, not only the careers of the Sherman Brothers and Mary Poppins, but what led to Walt Disney World, and how he worked on Disneyland and Disney World, attractions. And this gentleman had a pivotal role in a lot more than people think. Cool book, not a long book, easy to find, very fascinating. Also got a...
And a great way to use your Amazon gift card or Barnes & Noble gift card, which it is the first of the year, and if we're lucky, a lot of us, our friends will give us gift cards to spend, and if you love to read, we're giving you suggestions on how to spend your Amazon gift cards this month.
Yeah, there's another even more obscure one called the Cartoon Music Book.
It's got a green... I think I have that. It's a green cover.
Yeah. Okay. Edited by Daniel Goldmark. And that is a series of essays about all these different great composers of cartoons from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Point Curtin from Hanna-Barbera and Scott Bradley from MGM and the great Carl Stalling from Warner Brothers. and who they were, what they did. And I did a chapter on Maury Law, since Rankin Bass is kind of top of mind during the holidays. Mm-hmm. That one of the few interviews he actually did. And then I did a discography at the end. Hardly anybody knows this book is out there, but it's still in print. Then there's another book that Daniel Goldmark wrote called Tunes from the Tunes, that goes into great detail about Scott Bradley and Carl Stalling. Fascinating, you know, what these people were like. Scott Bradley was proud to write cartoon music, and he did speeches about it, and he wanted it to be a new art form. And, you know, when you watch these 6-minute cartoons and you know what they put into them, it gives you a whole new meaning. So that's another great book.
Greg Airbar is with us. A few ideas on how to spend your Amazon gift card, Barnes & Noble gift cards, other gift cards you may have received over the holidays. We'll have more suggestions with Greg at the end of our second hour. We hope you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we will pay tribute to Barbara Walters when we come back on TV Confidential. Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/tvconfidential, x.com/tvconfidential, or at TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.